The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, June is Pride Month for a lot of people. It's a source of huge celebration, but not everyone finds it as easy to be comfortable in their own skin. I'm joined now by Off the Ball's Daniel Pitcher. Daniel, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
Good to have you with us. You were on the bus recently and you overheard a conversation.
Yes, and it really sort of sparked my sort of want to talk about this. So basically, going in, there were a group of teenagers just in from school, and we were coming up the quays. They now have the Pride flags installed right along the quays in the city centre here in Dublin. And they were looking at them and going, why do they still need Pride? And I was kind of sitting, a couple of seats behind them, thinking about what they had just said. Why do they still need Pride?
The inference being that it's all sorted now, isn't it, grand?
Yeah.
And if you're gay, you'll be happy to be gay and everybody will be delighted for you and there's no issue.
Yeah, and this sort of attitude that, sure, look at, you know, we voted for, well, they didn't because they would have been too young. We voted for a marriage referendum and, you know, all of this sort of stuff. But still, in my mind, it was, and even the word they, why do they still need it? It's like it almost seemed like, OK, well, you know, here I am now placed into a box. And when I say here I am placed into a box again is because, you know, I am a gay man. And, you know, it's something that I have struggled with for years and years, stemming back to when I would probably their age in an Ireland that was a little bit different than it was than it is now, or, you know, maybe perhaps still even moving on from when, you know, in the 70s, 80s and 90s and so on, when it was illegal to be gay. But still going through school in a time where you were still bullied, picked on for being gay. Like,
did people know you were gay in school?
No. I, like, even up to the marriage referendum itself, 11 years ago, I had put up all of these firewalls. I didn't
Why
want...
Why did you do that, Daniel?
Because I couldn't accept... So what I thought was I didn't know how other people would react, or didn't know if people would accept me. Much later then turned into, I actually couldn't accept myself. And that was something that, you know, I've only sort of come to realizing maybe in the last couple of years.
You're in your 30s now,
right? I'm 35, yeah.
So you didn't want to be gay. Would that be fair to say?
That would be very fair to say, yeah. And, you know, growing up as a kid and like, you know, I kind of realized early enough into my teenage years that it was kind of like, okay, something feels different here. And then, you know, the eventual realization of, okay, well, this is why. And going at the same time, no.
Did your family know that you were gay?
Not straight away. And again, that was only sort of a conversation in the last 10 years. So I came out on the day of the referendum itself. I kind of figured that there was probably not going to be a better time. I was working in a different radio station and reporting on the referendum itself and, you know, the home to vote thing, and seeing those hordes of queues of people coming in on flights to Dublin Airport so that they could vote in this and have their say. And
that gave you confidence, did it too?
That gave me confidence. And like, I remember even as well I'd reached out to a couple of people. One of those was Nigel Owens. I'm sure you'd know of
yeah.
his story. So he's the international referee, first openly gay sports person in the world. And I had actually much earlier, like years before the referendum, reached out to Nigel because it was something like I was struggling and it was sending me to really dark places. And I found Nigel on Facebook and I said, do you know what? Look, all he can do is tell me to go away, or he can give me a really good piece of advice. So I contacted him on Facebook and said, right, you know, here's my story. And I'd say probably within about a half an hour or 45 minutes, Nigel had responded with, you know, a wonderful essay of advice of, you know, his experience and, you know, this is going to be okay. You know, you don't have to run or hide from this, that your life is going to be okay. And then, you know, even again, through lines of work, although it was probably more me trying to connect with that a little bit more. I interviewed Nigel then maybe 1 or 2 years later when he was over refereeing a Leinster match here about his book. But it was more me trying to sort of get inside his head, because I saw an awful lot of me in Nigel's story. So I was very heavily involved in sport. I was a rugby referee myself. I was a rugby coach. I was a PRO at my local football club. So in my head, I'm thinking, like, I'm in this, you know, sort of really manly world of sport. I'm a coach. And the coaching was probably the one that terrified me the most, because I was coaching in a secondary school. And in my head, I was thinking, you know, if this got out that I was a gay man, and if, you know, the people I was coaching had an issue with it, that probably would have been the end of that. I'd have had to pack it in.
And was it when you told the club, didn't you?
So no. So what I did was, when I came out on Facebook the day of the marriage referendum, and the support on that day was absolutely incredible. I press post and I went down to vote, and then on my way down to vote I saw a number of people going, "Oh my God, I've just seen your Facebook status. I had no idea, but well done. That was an incredibly brave thing to do. The support was unbelievable." So by the time then that would have been a Friday. So the Monday had come around, the next Monday, and I had gone up to the school to do the training, and I didn't really want to know if it had got that far. And I was just in my own head, took all the equipment, took all the balls and the bibs and the stuff, and went out and planned my training session on the pitch and waiting for all the lads to come out. When they eventually did come out, the guy who was my junior captain, so not even senior, junior captain, so he would have been probably about third year, so what, 14 or 15, came up to me and said, "We heard about your Facebook post." And I thought, oh,
your nerves were gone, were they?
I was just, my face, when he said that to me, my face dropped, and I thought, what is going to come next? And he said, "We've been talking about it in the changing room." And I'm like, oh no. It's just like, can the ground just completely open up now and take me? He said, "Look, we want you to know how proud we are to have you as our coach."
Great.
And I said, "Did he just say that?" And I didn't know how to respond. I was just frozen in a moment of, what an unbelievably positive thing to say.
And mature as well.
And mature.
Take it on himself.
From his, somebody his age.
And was that indicative of the response then across the club?
Yeah, mostly. So this would have been, this was a school, my old school. And that's what I was so concerned about. And, you know, it being a school environment, and then, you know, I was then at the same time involved in refereeing with the Leinster branch, and, you know, a number of referees reached out to me and, you know, said, "Jesus, you know, well done. That was an incredibly brave thing to post," because, you know, you're in that sort of manly world, particularly rugby.
Well, I wondered about that, and given your career as well, because you work across news and off the ball here, but very much you're focused on sport.
Yeah.
Does that make it more difficult for you to be comfortable in your skin?
It did at the time. And look, you know, like...
And now?
Now, there's still a bit... there's still a part of me that's very uncomfortable. Like, I mean, I remember having this conversation with my parents last year. Like, I was really in a bad way. And, you know, before it had sent me to really dark places, I won't go too much into it, but I had reached out. Pieta House were of great support. I won't talk about why. You can put two and two together with that one. But I just remember, was it last year or the year before? I had sat down with my parents and I couldn't even make sense of it in my own head why it was still a problem. All I knew was that it was, and these sort of old firewalls were still there, despite the fact that I had such great support from my family, from my friends, from work colleagues, from, you know, all of that. I think through time, I think there's only ever been maybe a handful, even less, of people who might have said something to me.
Have you ever been able to figure out where this negative connotation has come from around being gay in your mind?
So I think it's gone from, and as I kind of hinted earlier, it's gone from afraid of other people's reactions to just me accepting me. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I kind of described it as, you know, waking up, looking in the mirror and kind of despising the person that was looking back at me, but not knowing why that was. And, you know, I had to get like, you know, and I did. I reached out to a number of people, you know, even friends of mine that were gay and you know, just sitting down with them. And, you know, like they could see part of that in themselves, but they, you know, they have moved on an awful lot sort of quicker and have been able to accept their lives an awful lot more and be happy an awful lot more. And I'm getting there. I am getting there. I've started like I've started on the sort of the dating scene through apps, and it's a horrendous experience going through apps.
People who are straight would say it's horrendous as well.
Exactly,
but is this the first time that you've explored this side of your life where you've gone out to meet people?
Not the first time, but like so you know, I've gone about this before where, you know, I've met somebody, it's not gone great, and I've kind of like firewalls back up again and internally blaming myself for that. That, you know, it must have been something about me that the other person just wasn't into at all. And so firewalls went straight up, and it would take some time before the firewalls came back down and I could, you know, go about me.
And can I ask you, your decision to do this interview, is this part of you moving through this?
Well,
to be very
so
public
in,
about
in,
it?
In a certain way, yes, because like I have only ever spoken as openly as this once, and that was for, you know, a podcast for my gym back in COVID when I was extremely bored and just needed something to do. In a way it partly is, but it's also when I spoke at the start about the teenagers on the bus saying, you know, why do they still need pride? This is why, and I know that, like, you know, I'm obviously not the only one, you know, I'm obviously not the only sort of gay man going through what I've gone through or still going through it. There are still people out there. And I suppose one of the other things that I wanted to kind of make the point on, if that, you know, if somebody else was listening to this and could go, okay, and, you know, if one person could be helped, one person struggling could be helped by listening to anything that I've said about where I've sort of come from, how I'm getting on, because, you know, in a certain way, you know, I am still struggling, but moving on, I'm way more accepting of myself now and than I would have been. So one person being helped today, I'd leave this studio sort of you know, a happy person. So
I suppose, Daniel, there is a view, isn't there, that you, if you are gay, that you accept it and you're happy with it and you're happy to be very open about it.
Yeah.
And that really isn't the case, as you have shown us today. And it's to just understand that there are people for whom this is really, really difficult.
Yeah, so like it's not all sort of, you know, rainbows and everything is great. You know, I'm a big Bohemians fan, and Bose have launched their, you know, sort of pride events that they're going to be doing over the next while. And, you know, I've had people going, oh, are you going to any of them? And My immediate go-to that my head goes to is no, but I'm kind of like, no, hang on a second. Like that's, you know, a sort of me of old, but wanting then to actually go, actually, do you know what? I will. But the first thing my head will do is go, oh no, I don't want
to. You have to push through
I have to push through it. Yeah.
You talked there about speaking to your family and the support mm-hmm. that you've had from your family. Your granny was a very conservative woman, wasn't she?
Yeah, she would have been. And I suppose, God love her, she's gone now about 3 years, unfortunately. And I had a very strong bond with my grandmother, and she was a person who, because she was, you know, sort of a little bit conservative like that, and you know very Catholic, and you know, all of that, her opinion was one that I was actually terrified of, because I had such a strong bond with her. I didn't want a stray opinion to be the thing that goes, actually, do you know what, that person I just actually can't respect anymore. I wouldn't have been able to deal with that properly. And I sat down with her, I'd say probably in the last year or so, sort of before she died. And, you know, I would drop into her on my way home from work, and we'd just sit there and have a coffee and chat. And I dropped it into the conversation, and like, I remember driving to the house going, how am I even going to broach this conversation? How is this even going to come up? And it just came out, and I said it to her, and she looked at me for a minute, and I was trying to look into her face going, oh no. I said, like, should I have even said this at all? And what she said to me was absolutely beautiful. She said, like, why has this, you know, taken so long? She's like 90 years of age. Like, why
didn't you tell me sooner?
Why didn't you tell me sooner? And what she actually said to me as well was, you know, so she didn't vote in the marriage referendum. I don't think she was overly, you know, bothered one way or another. But she had actually, she said to me that had she known then, she would have got my dad to bring her to the polling station so she could vote yes.
That should be your guiding light, I think, yeah. Daniel, in all of this. Thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it. Daniel Pitcher from Off the Ball.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.